Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to Murder Mile, a true crime podcast, an audio-guided walk featuring many of London's untold, unsolved, and long-forgotten murders, all set within and beyond the West End. Today's episode is about a drug called TGN-1412. Successfully tested on animals, 8 healthy human test subjects were selected for a very routine trial, with all of the necessary safety measures in place. But within just a few hours of the drug being administered, 6 of the 8 would be fighting for their lives. Murder Mile's research used an authentic sources. It contains moments of satire, shock, and grisly details. And as a dramatization of the real events, it may also feature loud and realistic sounds. So that, no matter where you listen to this podcast, you'll feel like you're actually there. My name is Michael. I am your tour guide. And this is Murder Mile. Episode 123. The Elephant Men of Northwick Park. Today, I'm standing in Northwick Park, just outside Harrow, as we're 3 miles north of Ultra Electrics, where Reg Christie met Muriel Edie. 6 miles northeast of Alice Gross's memorial at Lock 97. 4 miles northwest of the last gasp of Peter Buckingham. And 3 miles northeast of the MI6 fantasist who used love to prey on the lonely. Coming soon to Murder Mile. This is the Northwick Park Hospital. Opened in 1970, Northwick and St Mark's Hospital is a foreboding, glass and steel-fronted facility encircled by a ring road and dotted with greenery, as each box-like building is connected by a series of dark skyways. Covering over half a square mile, Northwick Park Hospital has a department to cover almost every medical emergency, such as maternity, neurology, pediatrics, maxillofacial, hematology, and virology, as well as an accident and emergency, and conveniently, an intensive care unit. Since its inception 50 years ago, it's had a bit of an odd history. Simon Le Bon, the lead singer of Duran Duran, was a porter here. It was a location for the comedy series Green Wing, a scene for Fawlty Towers, and a brutal part of the horror film The Omen. Chilean dictator Augusto Pinochet was treated here whilst fighting extradition for murder and torture. And then it became infamous for the Elephant Men. Like many hospitals, a key part of its research and funding involves clinical testing. 732,000 participants take part in a clinical trial across the UK every year, with roughly 5,000 of those trialled at Northwick Park. Every medicine you've ever taken, from herpes to HRT, acne to angina, and bilious to bummage, was tested on healthy human volunteers in a clinical trial to ensure that it's safe. That little piece of paper inside your pack of pills which we all toss away without even reading, lists every side effect of the drug. Many are minor, some are serious. But almost every symptom was discovered in the clinical trial on human volunteers first. These trials are not without risk, so the risk is minimized. But sometimes, mistakes do happen. As it was here, on Monday the 13th of March 2006, the TGN-1412 was first tested on humans. And although the drug was designed to save lives, it left six healthy young men moments from death. One of the primary goals of medical research is the elimination of cancer. In 1984, two biochemists, Cesar Milstein and George Kohler, were awarded the Nobel Prize, having developed a technique for creating artificial monoclonal antibodies, also known as MABs. Proteins which latch onto the surface of cells, initiate a chemical reaction, and stop the cells from dividing. In 2004, German pharmaceutical firm Tegenero were trialing a new MAB to treat leukemia, multiple sclerosis, and some autoimmune diseases. Its clinical designation was TGN-1412. Like many cancer drugs before it, TGN-1412 would latch onto the patient's T cells, a key part of the immune system, and kickstart the body's own defenses into a heightened state. One positive being that MABs are less likely to be rejected by the immune system, but one negative is that it's hard to determine how toxic the drug might be to humans without conducting human trials. With the animal testing complete, phase one of a three-phase trial would be carried out to determine the drug's toxicity. In a normal trial of a cancer drug, cancer patients would be the perfect volunteers. But as TGN-1412 was designed to stimulate the cancer cells instead of stopping them dividing, the study, as many clinical trials do, needed healthy patients who didn't have a weakened immune system. Roughly 25% of all drugs don't make it past phase one in a clinical trial, so accurate testing is vital. And to ensure its impartiality, the drugs companies themselves hand over the testing to an independent. Parexel is an American biopharmaceutical service providing medical testing and clinical trials on behalf of its clients. To test a variety of drugs, including TGN-1412, Parexel had leased a private wing on the second floor of Northwick Park Hospital, just above the ICU, which came complete with two wards, 10 beds, and a range of monitoring equipment. All they had to do for the trial was to supply their own medical staff and volunteers. It was no different to any other clinical trial. The drug was approved for human testing, the volunteers were vetted, it was administered in a clean and controlled environment by medical professionals, and in accordance with a clear set of instructions by their regulatory body. Nothing should have gone wrong, but it would. In February 2006, eight volunteers were assessed at Northwick Park. All were healthy young men. Women are rarely used, as experimental drugs can cause a risk to reproductive organs. All were aged between 19 and 34. They had no health conditions. They weren't on any medications. And being ethnically diverse, they included British whites, Indian Asians, British Asians, Africans, an Australian, a New Zealander, and a South African. Their medical histories were checked, and their bloods were screened. For the volunteers, it was a no-brainer. Having been injected with a drug, all they had to do was lie in bed for 3 days, eating food, watching telly, and being prodded by doctors. And having described their symptoms, they would be given £2,000. The hardest part of any clinical trial is the boredom. It's the waiting which hurts. So many trial veterans know to bring books and music, whereas many newbies tend to play pool, or they learn to love watching loose women. Everyone had good reasons for being a human guinea pig. Rob Oldfield had returned from the US, where he was training to be an actor and needed to repay a loan to his mother. David Oakley had done 2 trials before and needed to fund his upcoming wedding. Navneet Modi, known as Nav, had done 2 trials before and needed money to buy himself a flight back home to India, but he was too proud to ask his father. Raist Khan was a recent graduate between jobs. Ryan Wilson was a trainee plumber saving up for driving lessons. Mohammed Abdeladi, also known as Nino, was an Egyptian-born bar manager in need of some cash. And there were 2 other volunteers who were never identified, but their situation was exactly the same. At the pre-trial assessment, the warning signs were there that something wasn't right. The volunteers later stated, There was no medical exam, no heart test, no listening to your breathing. You know, the normal things. The briefing should have lasted 30 to 45 minutes, as was done in 10. A doctor, I assume he was a doctor, he seemed very young, handed us a brick of papers and said, have a quick flick through these. If you've got any questions, ask me. They handed us a consent form, and we signed it. Everything seemed rushed. In the briefing, the doctors reassured the volunteers that nothing would go wrong. As although this was the drug's first in-human trial, they'd be given a safe dosage, scaled back 500 times. It would be carefully calculated to their body mass, and it would be administered in 10-minute intervals. As for any side effects, the worst you'll get is a headache or nausea, which will be gone in a few hours. It seemed safe, and it should have been. But a small mistake can have disastrous consequences. On Sunday the 12th of March, the night before, all 8 men arrived at Par Excel's private ward on the 2nd floor of Northwick Park Hospital. Split into 2 groups, David, Nav, Nino and Raist were in Trial Bay 1, with Rob, Ryan and the 2 unidentified volunteers in Trial Bay 2. By that point, Rob had overcome his nervousness. I was enjoying myself. It felt like a weird adventure. And Ryan the plumber was playing pool. That night was a bit of fun. There was the kind of vibe you'd get in a hostel. The atmosphere was relaxed. David had his books lined up ready to read. The Commonwealth Games was on the telly. And the 8 men all ate the same pre-trial meal of cheese and crackers. In charge of the trial was Dr. Daniel Bradford, principal investigator for Par Excel. I had been involved in more than 300 trials when I was put in charge of testing a new drug, TGN-1412. As was standard practice, this was a double-blind randomized trial, meaning that 6 of the men would be given the drug, 2 would be given a harmless placebo to act as a control, and neither the doctors, the nurses, nor the volunteers would know who had been given what. The ward was medically scrubbed, the equipment was sanitized, and all of the syringes, cannulas, and IV drips were fresh out of the wrapper. But again, just like the pre-trial assessment, it all seemed a bit rushed. At 7:30 a.m, the volunteers were awoken. David was annoyed from the off. I like to wake up and have a shower. But there was no time for that, as the clinical team had a schedule of 10-minute intervals to keep. So I splashed my face with water, got back into bed, and they wired me up to the ECGs. David Oakley was patient 001. At 8 a.m. precisely, with the cannula needle inserted into his right arm, an automatic IV pump administered the clear liquid at a precise rate. Within 6 minutes, the syringe was empty, and David had begun reading his book as he prepared for a very dull day ahead. At 8:10 a.m, Nino, patient 002, received his dose in an identical manner. But weighing 14 stone, his higher dose of 8.9 milliliters was proportionate to his size. At 8:20 a.m, as patient 003, known as Nav, was injected, David experienced the most common side effect of any drugs trial. Unable to administer a painkiller and risk ruining the results, the nurse applied a cold compress. At 8:30 a.m, patient 004, known as Raced, was injected. By this point, David's headache was a full-blown migraine, which came in sickening waves and a pain he had never experienced before. Nino felt the same. I started to feel ill almost as soon as they had finished injecting me. But the trial didn't stop. At 8:40 a.m, as Ryan, patient 005, was injected, the wards echoed with slow moans and groans, as one by one, all except for two of the human guinea pigs succumbed to the same symptoms at 10-minute intervals. And those who had just been injected witnessed the horrors they still had in store. At 8:50 and 9 a.m, patients 006 and 007, the two unidentified men, were injected. As David later said,
They could have stopped
and at least saved two of us,
but they didn't.
Rob, patient 008, later said,
The other two in the room
were already suffering.
It was having
a massive effect on their bodies, but still, the trial continued. And by 9:10 a.m, an hour after the first side effect was seen, it was only then that the trial was stopped. But by that point, everyone had been injected. Headaches became migraines, and Nino started to hallucinate. He said,
I felt like
I had rocks in my head. Bright colours flashed before my eyes, and I had a conversation with some imaginary person. Crippled with lumbar myalgia, the volunteers were doubled over as an intense pain gripped their lower backs, rendering every possible position as excruciating as the next. Gripped with rigors, their bodies violently shook like they had hypothermia.
It was like being dunked naked
into the Antarctic. Only being soaked with sweat, they weren't freezing. They were boiling. As a rapid fever wrapped their blood, their immune system ran rampant, and their core temperatures rose. Patients were bucking and burning,
twisting and turning, growing sicker by the second. Terrified of the torturous pain he was in, and still yet to experience, Nav tried to flee, screaming, "I don't want the money anymore. I just want to get out." Only to convulse and collapse in a crumpled heap. The peaceful tranquility of the ward was replaced by the chaos of a war zone. Rapidly breathing, with panic screaming, nurses frantically dashed from patient to patient, being too few to attend to too many. With the men's insides spewing out of every orifice, sheets were soaked in an ooze of festering fluids, as unable to control their own bodies. Hot spurts of urine soiled the beds. Steaming streaks of diarrhea spattered the walls. And having eaten nothing since last night's meager meal of cheese and crackers, many of the men bought up a litre of green bile. So much, even the nurse was shocked. Dr. Bradford later said, "They tumbled like dominoes. The wards were chaotic as they all went into shock." For that first hour, feeling a little anxious, hot, and unable to do anything but sit and watch, Raist and patient 007 had heard one of the doctors joke, "Well, now we know who the controls are." Only by then, one terrifying thought must have crossed their minds. Did I get the placebo, or am I next? This very routine drugs trial had turned into a waking nightmare. But for the elephant men of Northwick Park, the nightmare had only just begun. The symptoms the men had experienced that morning were nothing in comparison to what would happen to them over the next 5 hours. Becoming hypertensive, their blood pressure dropped to dangerously low levels, as tachycardia shot their heart rates from a sedate 60 beats per minute to a suicidal 100, 150, and even 200 BPM. With their fever spiking, their temperatures should have been at about 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit or 37 degrees Celsius. But many rose to 107 Fahrenheit and 42 Celsius. Just a few degrees higher, and they would have been as good as dead. TGN-1412 was designed to kickstart the body's immune system to fight off infection and disease. But with no cancer cells to fight, and their natural defenses in overdrive, the body started attacking itself. Having developed lymphopenia, an abnormally low level of white blood cells, and monocytopenia, a reduced blood cell count, their blood had stopped fighting infection and carrying oxygen to their vital organs. As every blood vessel in their weakened bodies became inflamed, with their red, raw, sweat-soaked skin stretched taut like it was ready to rip, their purple lips bulged like botched batches of Botox, and even the daintiest of their little digits doubled in width. It was as if each man was being inflated from within, as inch by inch and limb by limb, the six sick men were swelling. And the swelling wouldn't stop. At 1 p.m, 5 hours after the crisis began, Dr. Bradford ran down two flights of stairs to the intensive care unit at Northwick Park Hospital and grabbed two of the first doctors he could find. Even without wading through to find the solution hidden in Parexel's paperwork, the NHS doctors had correctly advised Dr. Bradford to administer fluids, antihistamine, and the steroid hydrocortisone. By 5 p.m., with the patient's screams now silenced. As the steaming, swollen men slumped in exhausted heaps, an odd peace had descended over the day's chaos. But their nightmare was far from over. 2 hours later, the dominoes began to fall. Ryan was the first. Struggling to breathe, his bloated body was dying, and every organ was failing. Now fully under the guidance of the NHS doctors, Ryan was the first to be transferred to the ICU. And one by one, the others would follow. At 8 p.m, Dr. Ganesh Santhalalingam, a highly experienced consultant for intensive care medicine at Northwick Park Hospital, was called in. And upon seeing the elephant men, having described his new patients as the sickest I have ever seen, the hospital declared a medical emergency. Flanked by specialists, wired to banks of monitors, and with tubes inserted into every orifice, machines performed almost every function for the weakened patients' bodies. Just after midnight, Dr. Santhalingam called his colleague, Dr. Nikki Panaskaltis, the hospital's consultant hemato-oncologist. They both agreed. This was unprecedented. No one should ever get that sick that quick. But it can happen. It's called a cytokine storm. It's where the body's immune system attacks itself. And it's an incredibly rare and almost improbable side effect of some blood cancer drugs. The solution was 1,000 micrograms of methylprednisolone, a large dose of very strong steroids. And ironically, daclizumab, a monoclonal antibody, or MAB, which just like TGN1412, binds to the T cells' receptors, but makes them inactive. The drugs would take hours, if not days, to take effect. And with so much damage already done, the doctors didn't know who, if anyone, would survive. The patients' loved ones rushed to the hospital and were shocked by the sights that they saw. Ryan's mother witnessed her son, all puffy because of the steroids, and the whites of the eyes were deep orange because of the toxins, which were slowly leaking from every pore in his distended body. Katrina, David's wife-to-be, said, "His cheeks were swollen. His eyes were like slits. His face was round like a big red ball. And his stomach was so huge, so large, he looked deformed and disfigured." Mafanwi, Nino's partner, stated, "The most shocking thing was seeing his lungs being pumped with air. He was covered in wires and tubes. His mouth was taped open, and he had a tube up his nose, drawing out this awful yellow gunk. When I saw him, I wanted to grab his hand, but there was nowhere to hold because it was covered in tapes and needles. His face had swollen horribly, and his head had ballooned to 3 times its normal size. It was a weird purple and yellow color, and his eyes were bulging." In a distressed state, she said, Nino had been left looking like the elephant man. And although it was an innocent comment, the tabloids ran with it. And by the morning, it was front page news. Two days later, as their fevers dropped and the swelling subsided, having regained consciousness, Four of the patients were taken off life support. But Ryan and Nino remained critical. David later said, "When I first went to the toilet by myself, I nearly passed out. I'd lost 13 kilos. We had no muscles. We were like 90-year-old men. It would take weeks for their organs to repair, months for the anemia to resolve, and for years afterwards, many were terrified of the risk of relapse, infection, and even cancer. They would all go on to live their lives as best they could. But for one, Ryan Wilson, the 20-year-old trainee plumber who was learning to drive, having suffered from pneumonia, septicemia, and dry gangrene, his fingertips fell off, and part of his foot and several toes had to be amputated. The investigation concluded that the drug had been injected into the patients within 6 minutes. That's 10 times faster than it had been injected in the animal tests. An initial report by the MHRA, described by many as a whitewash, made 22 recommendations for future in-human trials. But no one was found culpable, as scientists couldn't explain why it had gone so badly wrong. Unable to cover the insurance, German pharmaceutical company Tegenero went bankrupt. And in 2009, Parexel settled out of court, with all six volunteers receiving an undisclosed sum. In 2013, TGN-1412 was successfully trialled in Russia. In that trial, they used 0.1% of the antibody that was used in the Northwick Park trial, and it was infused into their bloodstream 40 times slower. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to Murder Mile. If you like cake and tea, and you'd love to learn more about this case, please do join me after the break. But before that, here's a brief promo for a true crime podcast which may very well be the cherry on your Bakewell tart.
Hello, tipsters. This is Melissa Morgan, the host of Just the Tipsters, America's favorite true crime podcast, because people are awful and kill each other. Hi, tipsters. This is Melissa Morgan, host of Just the Tipsters, America's favorite true crime podcast. Have you ever wanted to kill someone? Heyo, tipsters. This is Melissa Morgan, host of America's favorite true crime podcast, Just the Tipsters. And what makes Just the Tipsters America's favorite true crime podcast? It's because I said so, that's why. That's okay, right? I can say that? I mean, guard!
Just the Tipsters with Melissa Morgan is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, YouTube, Stitcher, the radio.com app, and wherever pods are cast. Subscribe, rate, review. You'll be glad you did.
A big thank you to my new Patreon supporters, many of whom are enjoying the very exclusive podcast series called Walk With Me, and
shh, it's a secret,
for a very select group of patrons, a second secret podcast series called Deadly Thoughts. Whoa. This week's new Patreon supporters to thank are Michael Anderson, Lainey, Kirsty Hewitt, Linda Bond, and Beth Steele. I thank you for your support, and I hope you enjoyed your goodies. Plus a special thank you to Nio, an anonymous friend, and Cecily Ostergaard for your kind words and donations via the supporter link in the show notes. That's very much appreciated. Murder Mile was researched, written, and performed by myself, with the main musical themes written and performed by Eric Stein and John Books of Cult With No Name. Thank you for listening, and sleep well.
Small details are big surfaces.
Tight corners or odd shapes? Flat, rounded, textured, or tall? Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Fucking hell. Jeez. That was bloody horrible. Yep, that was a long record. Oh, I could do the sleep now. Oh, God. Hey, everyone. Oh, God, that was hard. By the time it's all edited together, you'll be like, oh, well, that didn't seem hard. He seemed to fly through that, because everyone seems to think that the record just goes, just whizzes through in one easy blast. It's not. And that was really difficult, because we had words like lymphopneumonia, cytopenia, Dr. Ganesh Sunthara Lingam, Dr. Nikki Panoskalitsis, hemato-oncologist, methylprednisolone, fucking ridiculous, daclizumab, as well as God, that was a nightmare. I'd even rehearse these as well. I've got a little list in front of me of all the words that I need to remember and pronounce, and I've got a script in front of me, and it's still a nightmare. This is going to take bloody ages to edit. Anyway, welcome to Extra Mile. This is the unedited bit. There's an extra thing that I don't normally mention that I've started doing on the Patreon thing as well, which is outtakes, which people seem to like, because you know, I never really play the outtakes, but there's sometimes things are quite funny. You know, I get annoyed by things, and I make it like a little reel of like 3 minutes, and it's not all the outtakes. It's just the bits that I think could be quite interesting. So I'm not too sure. That I think that's like the $10 patron and above. I think that's they're the outtakes. But that's like not regularly, but it's Fridays. I think it tends to come out. So that's that. That's on there. But I hope you enjoyed that. So Extra Mile, this is the unedited bit. I'm going to go on, put on my coffee. I think I need a coffee. I ran out of coffee halfway through, and that was really annoying. No coffee. Hang on. Making a coffee. Here we go. Hang on. Almost done. Getting there in a second. Too many sugars. I put too many sugars in. We're going to have to deal with it. Deal with it, Michael. Deal with it. There we go. And what is today's cake? This is exciting. Oh, cake of the day. The cake of the day is it's a vanilla creme crown. I love these. It's kind of a round flaky pastry. It's a pastry. It's golden brown. It's got kind of almonds on the outside and kind of a swish swash of icing, but they seem to have been a bit mean on this one. And in the centre is kind of a vanilla cream custard. God, they're good. And even worse, there's two there. You can't get them separately. I've asked, I've screamed at them, I've said, can I have them separately? And they were like, no, you have to have two. Which means I have to eat two, which I will do. You know I will. I need it after that. That was exhausting. Trying to deal with the difficult words on here, but also We're in a bit of a storm at the moment. So it was nice last night. The boat was rocking back and forth, as it normally does when me and Eva are on the boat. But no, it's rocking back and forth. And I was trying to record, and then everything in the boat moves and it makes sound. So not only have you got the... which I'm going to have to work out how to edit that out or work out a way around it. But also everything creaks, so everything was knocking and banging. It's hard to record when all we can hear is knocking and banging. So, my computer just switched off. Or did it? Hang on. No, it's fine. Right. But everything's going well here. All good. I hope you enjoyed that episode. That was an interesting one. Came across that a long time ago. I remember seeing it on the telly, and I didn't really know much about it. I only knew what the kind of the newspapers had said, but as always, it had been overblown by the newspapers. But the more you look into it, it's kind of, I always thought people had died, but apparently people didn't die. But, you know, this is one of those episodes where someone doesn't need to die for it still to be quite interesting. And also, I thought to myself, this is something different to what we normally do. Do you know, there's no serial killers, there's no kind of family domestic crisis, you know, there's no gangsters. It's something different, so this is kind of changing it up, but that's all good. Everything's going well here. I'm trying to keep to my strict routine of, so instead of just doing 10,000 steps a day, I'm cracking that up a bit. So I've been doing, yesterday I did 20,000 steps, and I did another 20 before, and then I did 32,500 on Sunday, because I took a day off. That was nice. So I'm pulling in 125,000 steps this week, which means I will be above 500,000 for this month. And yet I'm still a fat bastard. Hurrah! Although... hang on, doing my coffee. It's coffee, so I don't need to let it stew. And yes, you'll be delighted to know, it's instant coffee. I find the proper coffee a little bit too strong for me, so I like the old wartime instant coffee. I quite like that. So I'm still a bit of a fat bastard, but apart from that, that's all good. Even though my shorts, I'm down to the last rung on my belt, not the fat rung but the thin rung, so I'm gonna have to make an extra rung because my shorts are falling down, which is a good sign. That means some of my gut is disappearing. Before we get into everything, just a quickie, just some birthday messages. Happy birthday, Amy. Happy birthday, Bob. Happy birthday, Rich. Belated birthday to Bob and Rich. I think it'll be Amy's birthday by the time this episode goes about, if you're listening to it on that day, which you might not be. Happy birthday to the Rudit as well. Belated birthday to the Rudit. So what shall I say? As mentioned, this was quite a complicated case. The really hard thing about this was going through all the details and then trying to piece it all together, because it's some of the articles were badly written by the tabloids, but then other articles were that I was going through, like in the medical journals, were written by doctors. And the problem with doctors is they like to show off to their chums. When you get a medical article, it's not written so people can understand it. It's nice when you find a doctor who can do that, but most of them are like, I want to impress my friends, I want to impress my colleagues, so I'm going to use as many complicated words as possible. And it's just like, even just trying to work out what a MAB was a nightmare. And, you know, so hopefully I've tried to make this as simple as possible, so I thought if I can understand it, then you can understand it. So that's what I've been aiming for on this one. So we'll get into some extra details about the case that I didn't put in the episode. This episode will probably be cut down as well. But if you'll become a Patreon subscriber, or you get the unedited script every week, so you can have a go through and go, oh, look, these bits didn't make it into the episode. Just to say, I might have mentioned it before. I have mentioned it 100 times. Walk With Me, new exclusive patron-only podcast. It's just a bit of fun. I record it after I've edited these episodes, so it's after I've kind of pieced everything together, and I can kind of give you more secrets into what kind of went into making the episode, but also things that might happen. So, you know, there were some interesting things with the Alice Gross episode that I'm not going to tell anyone about. Only Patreon listeners will know about what happened in that episode. And also, it hasn't been released at the time that I'm editing this. It will go out this weekend, but Deadly Thoughts go out, and this is for I've got a new tier, or it's not a new tier, but it's a tier called the whole damn block. And I'd already messaged my people in that tier saying, do you know, I wish I could give them more to make sure that they had more value for money. And then I thought to myself, what about if I do another podcast? But not something that's really complicated, something that's just good fun. So it's a new podcast called Deadly Thoughts, just a bit of fun. It's a murder-related cooking show featuring me and Eva Green, of course. So that's going to go out weekly. The idea with that podcast isn't I just keep doing stuff. If you're a patron in that tier, you can feed to me. Not feed to me like a mother bird being sick into a baby chick's mouth. That would be weird. It's kind of like, do you know, we have a bit of a back and forth dialogue with it. So if you have some ideas with it and you were like, what about this? What about that? We can all feed into it. So it would be all. The idea is I don't. We kind of naturally evolve the podcast and see where it goes. You know, if you have some ideas, let me know if you're in that tier. And also with that tier as well, you get an exclusive Murder Mile mug. Oh, and I've just ordered 20 new ones as well. Oh, exciting. Right. Slurp of coffee. Here we go. Oh. Hot coffee, lovely. Warm coffee, good. Cold coffee, eh. Which is why I can't understand people having those, you know, coffee frappuccino. Ugh, cold coffee. Okay. What I'm going to do, I'm going to do some extra stuff based around the what happened when they went to ICU. Because obviously, the important bit for the episode we've just done was kind of the precursor to that. Kind of the build-up, what the drug was about. We did the preliminary stages where the kind of, it was a little bit rushed. The assessment was rushed. There was no real medical testing. A lot of people who've been on it before, like David and Race, had done two before. And they said, you know, normally the briefing's like an hour, hour and a half. Yeah. You get your bloods checked, you get your heart done, you get your lungs checked. You know, they check everything. But with this one, they said it was like half an hour and it was done. Here's a brick of paperwork, dumped in front of them. I think even Rob said he was like, he wanted to read it, but it was a brick of paperwork. And he felt embarrassed because the doctor was talking to him and he felt rude trying to read this article and listen to the guy at the same time. So he didn't read it. And you know, they were all reassured, this is all fine, this is just a normal test. And it basically was. It went the same way as everything else. I think a lot of the medical professionals involved in this had become a little bit complacent because it was so generic. It was such a routine trial. But unfortunately, as you can see, a small mistake goes a long way. So we're going to jump. I didn't really put much of it in there, but Raced and patient 007, who were the placebo patients, they'd received the base. It was just basically saline, which is why they had no side effects at all, except obviously anxiety, because watching all this going on, they must have been absolutely terrified. But Race said he was sitting there for about 3 or 4 hours watching all this going on. And I've mentioned in the episode, he said he felt like a ghost. Everyone was rushing around and literally he was just being ignored. They hadn't got a reason to go and check on him. And then at one point a nurse came over and said, go and get yourself some food and some drink. Go and get your bag and your clothes. And he did that, and then when he came back to the ward to collect the rest of his stuff, he said it was a ghost town. It was like all the patients had been moved to one ward, and his was now empty and dead. And then he was sent home. And at no point did any of the medical professionals check him to make sure that his wasn't delayed. It was just like they saw no symptoms, so they were like, okay, go home, which is a bit crappy. But anyway, let's go to 7 o'clock onwards. So this is 10 hours after everything had started. All of the patients, we've had that brief respite where the steroids have done a little bit of good, but now all of a sudden everyone's going into multi-organ failure. So you've got six people deteriorating really, really fast. As mentioned, Ryan was the first. He's finding it hard to breathe. Lungs are collapsing. Because there's no oxygen in the blood going around the system, obviously the lungs aren't working, the liver's not working, the kidneys aren't working, everything has stopped working, everything is just... So they're having to get all these machines on board just to help these guys fight whatever is happening to them. About 8 o'clock, they called Dr. Ganesh Sarathan, the name I mentioned earlier on. I was practicing it last night, really struggled with it. I had a mate at college who had a much longer name than that. We always used to call him T2. Everyone was like, "Oh, where's T2?" Because T2 is easier to say than his name, which was about my name is long, but his name was like about 30 letters long, and he was just like, "That's too many syllables. I think there should be a law that states you only allowed two or three syllables in a name. Anything more than that, and you have to cut it down." All the patients were moved to the intensive care ward. This was luck. The fact that they were on the second floor, the Par Excel private wing was on the second floor of Northwick Park Hospital, and two floors below was the intensive care ward. Absolute luck that they had that. So the doctor, Dr. Bradford, was able to run down. He said he grabbed the first two doctors he could, and you know. NHS doctors, great, they know their job, they've got experience, they turn up, they were like, okay, you need that, that and that. Interestingly, in the book, supplied by Par Excel, in there it said large doses of steroids would be a solution to this. They were right, but Dr. Ganesh, let's call him Dr. Ganesh from this point. He'd actually worked out later on that actually steroids gave you a temporary respite, but actually it causes the patients to actually get worse. The hospital it was a medical emergency. A lot of the patients had actually collapsed by this point. They were going in and out of consciousness. I believe that some were I think it was Ryan who was put into a medically induced coma at this point to try and help him recover. They'd all got extremely high fevers. Their organs were failing. Their bloods and fluids were leaking out of their lungs. They had fans on them constantly to try and keep them cool. All had oxygen masks on to keep blood going into their system. Unfortunately, by this point, the hospital didn't have enough spare kidney dialysis machines. These aren't things that you just happen to have lying around. So police vans from across the city were alerted to collect dialysis machines from different hospitals and bring them to Northwick Park. It was, as you can appreciate, this is a major emergency. And it looked like a lot of the patients were going septic. In Ryan's case, he had, hence he lost some of his fingers and toes. Dr. Ganesh and his partner, Nikki Panoska, the other... That was difficult to say. Dr. Nikki Panskolitis, consultant hemato-oncologist. Even that was... That probably took me 5 minutes just to say that bit. And practiced it as well. they got together. They were on the phone together and they were like, "Oh, Joe, what is this? What is going on?" Do you know, because they'd looked at the paperwork to do with the drug, but it just didn't make sense what was going on. So they were trying to work out whether it was an infection, but it didn't look like an infection. They tried steroids, and that's when they worked out it was a cyclonic storm. Let's go into more of the details. I don't know whether I use all the details about... The relatives turned up, so Rob's mum turned up about 2 a.m. She was called at about 2 a.m., called in the middle of the night. She had to come all the way from Bristol, which is in the southwest, to Northwick Park. They said the doctors were saying, this is possibly your goodbye, that the person may die. When Rob's mother arrived, the look in his eyes told him that he was in a bad condition. He said, "I now know that I was very puffy because of the steroids. The whites of my eyes were orange because of the toxins. I didn't look well at all." With David Oakley, his partner Katrina was called at 3:30 a.m. The problem was because Par Excel hadn't taken down a phone number of her, they really struggled to find a contact detail to get her to come over. So when she was called, she obviously raced over. Said he looked really bad. He was disfigured. He was on a ventilator. He was fighting for his life. The fluids inside his body had made them bulk up, which is why they were referred to as the elephant men, because like their bodies were like almost double, in some cases triple their size, especially with their heads as well, because a lot of the fluid had gone to their heads. There's apparently only one photo of one of the patients, which was Rob, that was taken inside the ward that day. Although it's never been released, it is being used as part of the trial for this, but it was never released to the press. There's a version of what they look like, which I've uploaded to Patreon, but there's nothing else on there. To Katrina, the doctors had said, so she got there around 4 a.m. She said, it was gloomy and dark, and I was wandering around the hospital hysterical. One of the doctors explained that they were on machines and they had tubes going in and were really swollen. They prepared her for the worst because they weren't a pretty sight. They said they were doing their best, but they didn't know what the chances of surviving were. Despite warnings, Katrina was shocked by the experience. She said David's head looked like a ball and his eyes were like slits. His stomach was completely swollen and she thought... I had a sneeze coming for about a minute then. And I thought, bless me. Second sneeze. Oh, that's the problem with being light sensitive. Just blew my nose. Oh, that's a little treat for everyone. She said, his stomach was completely swollen and I thought he had his hands over his stomach until I saw them over his sides. He was shivering and his whole body was vibrating. A lot of the details we get from Fanwy, who was there. She said, at that stage, I didn't think too much of it. And when the phone rang at 3 a.m. on Tuesday morning, I thought it was him. And I said, hi, you're up late. But it wasn't Nino. It was a nurse from Parexel. She told me Nino was in Northwick Park Hospital and he had a bad reaction to the drugs. No shit. I knew something was up. But she refused to go into details. She just kept saying, he's very, very sick. You'd better get here and they will explain everything to you. She leapt in her car and drove straight to the hospital. By the time she arrived, which was around 3:30, Nino had been sedated because he had become too distressed. She was not allowed to see him for an hour as consultants explained that the anti-inflammatory drugs appeared to have had a reverse effect on the volunteers, causing uncontrollable swelling. Mafanwi said her partner, Nino, had been left looking like an elephant man. All puffed up, his face and head had swollen horribly and they were now a weird purple and yellow colour. His face, I've done most of this in the episode, let's just see if there's any bits I didn't use. No, I want to move on just because there's a big bit that I didn't do at the end. It was the next. Next morning, obviously, the phrase "Elephant Man" has already been used. All the press pick up on it and all of a sudden it becomes a big story and everyone imagines. I think Rob says that everything was exaggerated. We were just very puffy and bloated. Pump full of steroids and liquids. Our eyes were orange because of the toxins. Oh, boat just went past too fast and bashed my boat. Not bashed into it, it's just dickhead's not learning to drive properly. And it's windy weather as well. Twat. Anyway, he said, as soon as she made the Elephant Man remark, everybody thought we were melted toxic waste. But he said, that's not true. We were swollen beyond recognition, but we're still recognisably human. Before long, there were reporters and film crews outside. The press were like lunatics hanging outside the hospital. Rob said, I had a little TV in my room and my family didn't want me to watch it because it was like, they're in a critical state, some of them could die. They thought that if you hear that, you start emotionally gearing for death and you're more likely to die. I never thought I was going to die. I'm not a pessimist. But if you look at the newspapers for the time, I've put one in the Patreon thing which says, it was a Sun headline, it says, we saw human guinea pigs explode. No you didn't, nobody exploded at all, but that's classic Sun headline where they just write any old shit and then people go, oh, they exploded, oh, Elephant Man exploded. It's because it's easier to sell a newspaper if you put shit on the front page. There was, as mentioned, there was a criminal investigation the very next morning. So literally 24 hours after the trial had started, the police contacted the MHRA, which is the regulatory body, and a specialist crime unit called the Director of Inspectors for the MHRA. They seized everything, took that to double check for tampering and neglect. The drugs were seized and everything was put into sealed bags. Dr. Bradford said, a few days later, I was told I couldn't go into my office because the police had sealed off my desk and bin. The health secretary was called for an official investigation. Police were looking for someone to blame, an idiot who had given the wrong dose. But everything we did followed protocol. If it's written and you're a doctor, and you, that's it, isn't it? So it was never, to be honest, it was never stated in here who it was who said to put them in 10-minute intervals with the full doses within 6 minutes. So, you know, that's what we don't know at this point. It was never really mentioned in any of the paperwork that I've seen. So they couldn't blame Dr. Bradford for it. It looks like it could have been something that Par Excel just hadn't, like, whoever wrote the paperwork that was given out with it obviously made a bit of a cock-up. A small cock-up, but it had massive effects. What we got? Hang on. As mentioned, all of that for 2 weeks afterwards, all of their bloods had to be filtered 24 hours a day. Their immune system was basically shot. Their liver and kidneys and lungs were failing. But you know, they started to improve slowly but slowly. We've mentioned that David mentioned that their bodies were like he lost 13 kilos within 8 days. That's ridiculous. And they said we had no muscles left, because you appreciate all the blood vessels are eating all the muscles, so they had literally nothing left. So this is where I wanted to get to afterwards. Spillage of coffee because of the dickhead and his speeding boat. Right, this is it. So afterwards, Nav. This is Navneet Modi, also known as Mav. Nav, 8 months after the trial, Nav is still suffering with problems after the trial itself. He had problems with his bowels and his urine. He was desperate to go home, but he didn't have, because he didn't have the money for the treatment, obviously he didn't get money for that. What was the bit I was looking for? He hoped to go back to India, but he remained in the UK for tests and treatment. He doesn't recognise himself these days, at least physically. This is an article from like a year, 6 months to a year afterwards. Since the trial, he's managed to put back on 13 kilos. Again, he lost as much as David did. He has stomach problems, amnesia, and is exhausted. For the first 2 or 3 months, he says he could barely walk. I couldn't even iron my own clothes, couldn't cook for myself. Everything I did made me tired, even watching a movie. Beforehand, I had so much stamina, I could work 24/7. I once remember working through a 36-hour shift. Since then, I've had a complete blackout twice and I've forgotten words. Where were we? Obviously, he didn't tell his parents, because his parents were in India, and he didn't tell his parents that he was doing the drug trial, because, as mentioned at the start, he wanted to get a ticket home to see his family, but he was too ashamed to ask his dad for the money. But he's, because it was all over the newspapers, his parents actually found out what was happening, and they were quite upset with him about this. He said he used to be full of fun and adventure. I'd be out partying and clubbing. I wasn't bothered about taking the risks. I bought gold, then stored it, then sold it, made profits and losses. I was quite mischievous. Now I'm a very sober person. Mischievous was better. Modi was planning to settle down. His parents had hoped to arrange a marriage for him, but he has told them he is not ready. I don't want to waste someone else's life. It could be that nothing happens to me, but you just don't know. I didn't say that to my parents exactly. Back home, it would be difficult for a widow to remarry. The doctors told him that he must stay here for tests for at least a year after the trial. He said he is lonely, bored and tired. As for Rob, Rob was the actor who'd just come back from America. Initially, the patients in this got a £10,000 payoff from ParXL, which was a bit of an a massive insult for everyone involved. But he used that money to hire a personal trainer, as you can appreciate, he's an actor, so he wanted to get himself back into shape. Initially his name wasn't mentioned in any of the articles coming out because, as you can appreciate, he's an actor. He didn't want to be associated with being known as an elephant man if you're going to go off to be an actor. But he said, I've quite often lost my train of thought. It's one of the downsides. My memory keeps cutting out and I feel spaced out all the time. Rob didn't think he was badly affected, although he remembers being shocked when they inserted the wires and tubes into him on dialysis. Not Dionysus, that's different. But 6 months on, he worries about everything. Over the past few days, he felt something weird around his heart and isn't sure whether it's a palpitation or indigestion. With David... David Oakley was diagnosed by Professor Powell as showing early signs of lymphoma, which is a type of cancer, and they found irregular cells in David's immune system. Obviously, he was absolutely worried about this because obviously him and his fiance wife to be at that point were hoping to have children. He was training to be a driving instructor around that time. That's why they were going to get married. They did get married in the end, and he was training to be a driving instructor. But he said it's very hard to concentrate on things at the moment. He is the same as everyone else. He's kind of really struggling with kind of just keeping a single thought in his head. Looking at the details now, he didn't end up getting cancer, which is great. He eventually did get married, and they have, as far as I know, had a child or two children, as far as I know. So he seems to be doing okay. Nino, I haven't got any more updates on Nino. He was able to leave the hospital within 2 weeks to recuperate at home. As far as I know, him and Mafan, we are no longer together. But he, as with the others, he plagued by inability to sleep. He had nightmares. A lot of them suffered with anxiety afterwards and constant breathlessness. And as mentioned, Ryan Wilson, who was only 20 at the time, was in hospital for 4 months. He suffered heart, liver and kidney failure, pneumonia, septicemia and frostbite-like symptoms, which turned out to be dry gangrene, which resulted in his toes and sections of his feet being amputated and several fingertips fell off. He said, I'm still haunted by the words of my father, who told him the night before the trial, don't do it. Your body is a temple. After 21 days, he was still in critical condition, still in the ICU. Rob went to see him, but Ryan was unable to speak. His fingers had blackened by that point, and there was no hope of saving them. What else is there? Obviously, lawyers got involved at this point, trying to see if the men could get compensation for what they'd suffered. But it ended up being a really, really long and overdrawn kind of process. One of the big problems was that the MHRA, who's the regulatory body, they did an investigation into this. And everyone who kind of read it just said, this is a bit of a whitewash. Basically, they're covering the arse of ParXL and all that and just saying that everything is fine. And here's some recommendations for the future. But there's no one to blame here. There is the report that you can have a look on there. You can have a look online. The report is available on there. ParXL issued a statement, but again, that statement as well was kind of a bit of a, that Same as the MHR recommendations, that doses should from now on not be given to other volunteers all on the same day, that everyone should receive lower doses, that all high-risk trials should be placed in hospitals, and this would be adopted by the European Medical Agency as well. They admitted that there were some failures in the report. A failure to complete the full medical background of the trial subjects in writing, and the medical history of one volunteer was not updated. There was no contract in place between Tegenero and PARXL at the start of the trial, and only a draft contract between PARXL and the private laboratory which was used. Two volunteers were allowed to leave the trial before it was confirmed if they had received the placebo. PARXL failed to review Tegenero's insurance policy to ensure there were no exclusions in it that would impact on the volunteers. One of the doctors involved in the trial did not have adequate training or experience, and there was no 24-hour medical cover. As mentioned, Tegenero, the German pharmaceutical company, went bankrupt owing to the insurance that they had. It emerged that Tegenero had insured the volunteers for only £2 million. The lawyers for this said, any lawyer worth their salt will tell you this is a ridiculously small amount. We insure for about £9 million a case. That's just the lawyers, not the medical people. There's a little quote by Dr. Bradford here. He said, I am proud of the way the team kept the men alive. We could have had six corpses. One man had to stay in hospital for a couple of months, and another was kept in for a few weeks. The other four were stable after about 10 days. The worst affected patient lost his fingers and toes, and they were all told they could be more likely to develop other diseases in the future. This was the fear for all of the men, was not just the physical ailments, but, you know, because their immune system was weak, what other diseases and infections can they get? And imagine what it's like for them right now with COVID going on as well. The investigation, the Duff report, took several months. It found no negligence, but made 22 recommendations. Laws have changed around the world as a result of the trial. You can't dose all of the volunteers in one day anymore. That was the last first in-man trial I did. As doctors, we swear to do no harm, and I felt guilty every day for years. I told myself I should have given lower doses. I should have somehow known they were too high. But other doctors told me it could have easily been then. I thought about the men a lot in the last 10 years. I would love to know how they are. I don't think they would want to hear from me. I'd like to look them in the eye and say sorry. And that's it. As mentioned, the drug has been renamed TAB-08. It was trialled in Russia. They obviously used a much lower dosage, and it is now effectively being used to treat cancer. Cool, dear, that was a lot. That was too much, an extra mile there. I think that was an extra mile overload. So I'm not going to waffle on because I've got a coffee to drink. I've got a creme crown to tuck into. That's next. That's going to be shoved straight into my face. I don't think I'm going to chew or swallow. And then I've got to edit this, which is going to be a bloody nightmare. Right. Thank you so much. Hope you enjoyed that. We got a two-parter next week, I believe. I could be wrong. But it's a very interesting one, a very different. So I hope you enjoyed that. Thank you so much for listening. And wherever you are, whatever you're doing, please stay safe. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.